a reading from Mark chapter 4, verses 35 through 41. On that day, when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in a boat, just as he was. Other boats were with him. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him up and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" He woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." Then the wind ceased, and there was dead calm. And he said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with great awe and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Amen.
There are three great things in this scene. I don't mean great in the way that we all always use that word, sort of a free radical that attaches to just about any noun in the book. Great pizza, great movie, great party, great trip, great root canal. You know, we just use that word all the time. It might be our most popular adverb, too. How are the kids doing? Great. How's your summer going? Great. How's the new job? Just great. Mark likes the word great as much as we do, but he tends to use it far more sparingly and specifically than we do. So it's somewhat remarkable that in the short account that Steve just read with us now, the word great, mega in Greek, a word we'll also recognize, the word mega appears three times in that short account. Three different things right in a row Mark chooses to describe with that choice word. The first is a storm, a great storm, we're told. Meteorologists would have a heyday with the weather report at the Sea of Galilee, this mercurial weather system around the Sea of Galilee, which is really not a sea at all, but a very big lake, about 64 square miles. Cool winds blow down from the Golan Heights to the east, colliding with warm air that rises from the water's surface. When those two meet, the result can be a sudden and treacherous storm. We know a little about storms, don't we? And being surprised by them. Remember our Valentine's Day present this year? A winter storm broadsiding us with extreme cold and snow and ice. We lost power, we lost water, we lost lives. Of course, the biggest storm of the past year did not bring snow and ice and cold. It was a viral storm claiming, to this point, over 600,000 lives in the U.S. alone and millions worldwide, indelibly affecting every single one of our lives, our families, our churches, our schools, our businesses, our communities. In that same time frame, we faced a cultural storm in pulling back the curtain of our own history and present with regard to how we treat and mistreat one another relative to ethnicity. And seeking to come to terms with what it would mean to overcome those patterns. And then there was another storm, the storming of our nation's capital, adding insult to injury in a year full of storms, a national disgrace that left us with profound questions about who we all are and how we're going to practice handling our big differences. We know about storms. We could be in this story, couldn't we? Rembrandt, the 17th century Dutch painter, actually was. He painted the scene of Jesus with his disciples and included himself in the painting, standing there on the deck of the pitching boat, looking out at us from the canvas. Find your way to that captivating work of art sometime. With one hand, he is steadying himself on the rigging. With the other, he's holding his cap in place against the wind. Or maybe this is a gesture of looking out at us and saying, "What have I got myself into, painting myself into this maelstrom?" We're not really sure how he's feeling, what he means. He's in that storm, and we could be too. Mark describes for us a great storm, and he describes a great fear. The disciples, he writes, feared a great fear. Of course they did. Who wouldn't? A great storm, a great fear, and a great calm. Jesus rebukes the wind and says to the waves, "Peace, be still," gives new meaning to the phrase from the psalm, "Be still and know that I am God." The wind ceases, and Mark tells us there is a great calm. Three greats, there they are, in one brief story. From great storm to great fear to great calm. That's really all the sermon we need, isn't it? 3 points and a prayer. We all done? Let's move on. Except, here's the problem. That's not the order of things. Great storm, great fear, great calm. In Mark's account, this is the sequence. Great storm, great calm, great fear. Don't ask me why. The fear comes after the calm. We'll have to ask Mark that question. And he's likely to say, as much as the disciples are disturbed by the raging sea, there's something else that truly petrifies them. And it's the demonstration of Jesus' power, his seemingly divine authority in subduing a great storm into a great calm. That's what brings great fear to the disciples. You hear me, church? In Mark, the cloth of devotion is very often woven from threads of faith and uncertainty. Belief and disbelief often coexist in the same faith journey. As the gospel unfolds, Jesus will prove to be both captivating and perplexing, inspiring in those who choose to follow him both devotion and ambivalence. Can anyone relate? A father says to Jesus in Mark's gospel, "I believe. Help my unbelief." Witnesses to the resurrection in Mark's gospel are frightened by faith. And now here, the storm on the lake that was outside has moved inside, leaving the disciples pitching and reeling as their boat rests quietly on a glassy sea. Mark may be revealing such a mix of emotions to us, the reader, the church, to increase the chances that you and I might see ourselves in the painting too. Drawn to Christ, but also nervous, a little nervous about what deeper discipleship might look like were we to get too close to this one who calms the sea. If this one who rulest wind and water stands by me, my choices, my prayer life, my giving and serving, my nursed wounds, my cultivated self-absorption, my yearning to be things I've never been before, to know a purpose, a power, a presence in my life that I never dared to hope for until now. To say Jesus is Lord of wind and sea and of my life too is to invite the gritty and grace-filled work of spiritual transformation on the way to life in its truest abundance. Who wants to risk that? Who wants to risk? There's one more great thing in this story. It isn't named by Mark, but it's terribly obvious. That is the great trust on the part of the shaken disciples to stay with Jesus anyway. This one whom they have come to both fear and crave. In spite of all their trepidation, they wish to know him, to follow him, to serve him. Can you understand? I can. Great storm, great calm, great fear, great trust anyway. Where are you today, friends, in that sequence? Where are we together? What is the titration, the blend of uncertainty and yearning in your relationship with God, cautiously seeking to draw nearer to your true calling, to practice as my young cousin Rachel would have said, to practice more faith than fear. She never said faith to the exclusion of fear. More faith than there is fear. My friend just lost his father this month. And in his reminiscences at a memorial service earlier in the week, portrayed in one simple story the essence of his father's love. As a child, he would jump into the shallow end of the pool where a few feet away his dad stood waiting to draw him from the water. Climb out, do it again, jump in the pool, splash and paddle and swim his way toward his dad who was right there, who'd lift him up and set him at the edge of the pool and out and back in again and again and again. After a while, he noticed something. He noticed that as he was swimming toward his dad, that his father's feet were slowly shuffling backward, just a little, leading his young son further and further toward the deep. Yet always staying close enough to reach out and gather him up when it was time. Isn't that a beautiful portrait of a good father? Lovingly, patiently, slowly, building confidence and self-assurance in his child. It's also a helpful portrait, I think, of a disciple of Jesus on the other side of that story. My friend, after all, upon discovering what was going on there under the water, decided to keep playing the game. Climbed back out of the pool, jumped in again, swimming and splashing and kicking a little further each time, a little deeper, assured that those backward shuffling feet would stay near enough, not just to guide, but to guard that little boy. And they did, every time. He was timid at first about going further and further, as any of us would be, but he surely felt what we all feel. We all feel that he didn't want to live his whole life in the shallow end of the pool. Do you know what I mean? He didn't want to live his whole life in the shallow end of the pool. And he had discovered someone who could lead him deeper. Today, in the person of Jesus, so have we.